I'd like to apologise to our Australian guests.
Yeah, I can understand most of the words, no, but not the places.
Yeah, we'll try. Yeah, yeah.
My husband says that too.
Yeah, what? The name of Scotland.
Yeah. Come on, old Sir Clitoris.
Have you pressed record, Stephen?
We're recording already.
Oh, wow.
He always does that.
You can't have
he always does that.
I'm trying about to catch people out.
Oh, you are?
Yeah. Yeah, no, he was recording, which I didn't know. You're doing stand-up. Sorry, this is
Hello.
Lynn Ferguson.
Well, there are other Lynn Fergusons, just so you know. If you went on the Twitter, which is not called Twitter anymore, it's called X. I know, right? Where you're just like, that's a bad strip club or something like that, right? There are other Lynn Fergusons on there. I do believe some of them are bankers and things like that. So I am just one of many.
But you're the best Lynn Ferguson.
Do you know any other ones, so Copstick?
No, I don't know other
then,
ones.
Right?
Yes. But you know, I
don't want to.
Oh, no. This is pals.
When you've met her, you don't want to meet. And
it's enough. You're enough. That's why.
It's a compliment.
As in the olden days, once she when she escaped Cumbernauld for a wee bit on a weekend, my first memory of the Lynn Ferguson, well, that's what we'll call you, know, the Lynn Ferguson, was as one half of the Alexander sisters.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Yeah, do you remember the Alexander sisters?
I do indeed.
We had, just to fill you in,
please do.
Sorry, on the end of the table,
hiya.
We've got Vanessa.
Hiya.
Hello.
Who's from Australia.
Hiya.
Australia.
G'day.
Yeah.
And she's doing it's very sensitive.
Were you about to launch into an Australian accent then?
No, not really.
She was thinking about it.
No, I thought the funniest thing I've ever seen was shown to me by an Australian friend of mine. And it's I don't know if it's TikTok, but it might have been an Instagram video thing about it's a New Zealand carpenter who talks about doing his dick.
Yeah.
You know, I like the children to come and play on my dick. I sometimes,
oh,
you know, eight or ten,
sit on my dick.
8 or 10 children on my dick at the one time. And I just so funny. You cannot, anytime somebody says dick, you're going, my dick. So anyway, Vanessa's here doing a sensitive piece of performance art.
Very sensitive for the crowd that wish they were
it's
there.
It's very, very moving. Very, very feminist in its own way.
Right.
And the title is, Vanessa?
Teardrops on My Dildo.
Oh.
Yeah, so I never meant it to be feminist. I thought I was just a funny slut. But turns
Maybe
out there's a message.
Post-feminist.
I don't know. I
don't know what that
lover.
Is, but I just like
no,
that.
It's post-feminist.
That's post-feminist.
Lynn would know what post-feminist
Beyond my time.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I wouldn't at all. Do you know what I'm thinking, though? Well, I'm thinking it's interesting, though, because we were talking earlier on about shows and everything.
Yep.
And I am, and you too, Martha, you're right into the story. That's our, we're
like
story
all
twins.
All about the story.
And
then.
I have this thing about if you're not telling the story of you, if you're not saying what your story is in your show, then just do fucking Shakespeare or something because he's good. So I think that evidently you're doing a story that is you, which sounds
I think that's
like
and
her dildo.
A comedian, and though, isn't it? Yeah, my collection, a dildo, plural. That's comedy, though, isn't it? Like, if you're being yourself, you've got no competition. Like, no one can do what you do because you're you.
Oh, well, many people can do what I do, sadly.
Oh, just no, but you're the.
I am the. But there are many Lynn Fergusons.
Not
right?
The
Lynn Ferguson.
Just yeah.
Doing it.
Yeah, thanks very much.
They bring down the brand. They degrade the brand.
Do you know, I was having that like thing because I called today Manic Depressive Tuesday, right? Because it's a really difficult Tuesday in the fringe today. Everybody's like, oh, my career's down the toilet, or oh, my expectations are whatever, or oh, even though I'm doing well, it's not good enough, right? And then I come in here and I'm like, I mean, because me, I was just like Manic Depressive Tuesday. I could be at home, you know, watching my chickens, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I come in here and you've cheered me up.
Well, that's good.
Yeah,
that was easy.
Yeah.
Chickens, yeah. You're known for chickens.
I'm known for chickens and I'm writing a
How are you known
chickens?
For chickens?
Because the chicken run thing.
Famous film. She was the voice of...
Really?
Brilliant.
I am still the voice
still.
Of...
Yeah. How does the voice go? Can you give us a little...
It's a bit like me.
Oh, yeah. You didn't have to do any...
No.
Just
well, no, it's all about
talk.
Timing, right? It's the way when you're timing to... It's stop motion, and so when you're timing to stop motion, you have to... I'm going to use, like, fancy phrasing here. You have to tailor your voice according to what the shot is. So if the shot is like a long shot and you're in the distance and you have to change your voice according to make that
and work. Were you a chicken?
I am a chicken, yeah.
Yep.
Did you think in those long gone days when you were part of the
Alexander
and other? I liked the Alexander sisters.
Did you?
I did very much.
Tell me what they were. Who were the Alexander sisters?
I think the Lynn Ferguson should explain. Comedy duo.
We came out of drama school, and in drama school, it was me and this girl, Carolyn, and in drama school, we were sort of trained to be like extras for the National Theatre, right? So we could do lots of talking like that. And then we had to get our equity cards, like our union cards, and the way to do that was to do variety at the time. And so we had this thing of, I don't know that I would do this now, right? Although sometimes I wouldn't, you would fucking do it now. That we had this idea that if you are a good performer or you are really clear on what you do, then it wouldn't matter what the venue was. So we would do theatres and bars and working men's clubs. We even at one point toured with a band called the Water Boys. Do you know the Water Boys?
Yeah.
We did.
The Hole in the Moon.
Aye, we did. And I seem to remember there was a fist fight backstage, but I don't really remember what it was about. But like we had this
what
idea.
What album was that one?
I don't know. The Hole of the Moon. It was one of their early
ones.
The fist fight backstage.
Oh, I thought that was a song.
No. We had a proper, there was stuff going on, yeah. So we had this idea that if you wanted to do performance, then it should be anywhere. And I still kind of like that. It's one of the things I like about the Fringe, actually, although it's difficult. I don't know if you guys get this, but do you get bleed through from the other rooms, right?
But there's always bleed through.
Yeah, see, not where I am. Bedlam's a beautiful space.
I quite like it, though, because I do this story thing where it's like a real sad story, right? Or difficult. And then through the room, there's people doing some like musical about fucking cartoon characters, and I like it because it reminds you that thing of if you really are doing what you're doing, then you should be able to do it anywhere, and it doesn't really matter what the circumstance is, right? Yeah,
that's 100%.
Yeah, that's what you think as well, isn't
totally.
It?
Totally. Do you know what I mean? If whatever it is that you're doing is going to be completely derailed by, I don't know, applause from next door's venue, you're really not fucking doing it very well, are you?
No.
You're just really not focused, that's the thing. But sometimes it can be hilarious. Mm. Like, I did this thing in my own country, right, where I live now. And I did this very impressive fucking thing where I was doing a bit of poetry and all that stuff. And I had to do it all timing and everything. And I got to this bit where I said, and for an instant, everything was still, right? It was meant to be like this moment where it was like a little crystal bell and somebody's phone went and I thought it was funny because I'm a big leathery old woman, do you know what I mean? And I'm like, well, you know, shit like that happens. But what happened was that the audience got really angry, man. They got all judgy on this woman and they were whatever, and then you want to stop and go, everybody chill out. It's not a war crime.
Only a wee poem. Come on.
Yeah.
Although today I had a very unfortunate bus incident.
Oh, no, what?
Just at a right poignant moment. Right poignant. And this fuck, of course the windows were open.
Oh, no.
Because that's what passes for air conditioning in a lot of the venues. Yeah. Let's just open the windows.
Yeah.
And the windows were open and then somebody is meant to come in and close them. But they didn't do the closing.
Manic
of the
Depressive
windows.
Tuesday.
It's manic depressive. It's certainly, you know, I ain't closing the windows Tuesday.
Yeah.
But anyway, a bus went past and kind of sat there, purring. And I thought, I'm trying to be fucking poignant. Do you want to move your bus?
And
we looked at it for a while, and then it became almost a pleasant backdrop, I felt.
Gentle humming.
See? Yeah. But then it adds to it, because there is a thing about Edinburgh, which is it grows you, I do think. I'm talking too much, you can tell me sharp. But I think that the thing with Edinburgh, well, it's a wanky thing to say, but it's truth, I think, which is that growth is painful, and that there's a point in Edinburgh where you're just like, what am I doing this for? This is fucking hard. Like,
yeah,
really,
but anything out of
hard.
Your comfort zone is good for you, isn't it? And right. these crowds are, these are probably the hardest crowds I've ever done because I've never done yeah. international shows before. Right. And so I have international people come, but it's still more primarily Aussie crowds.
Yeah.
And so it's just hard, like your language, and then you're like, fuck, am I speaking too fast? What is it that's not quite grabbing with some people? Yeah, but and it's a challenge, but you've got to, yeah, if you don't do it, you're just going to get too comfortable. And
the things that Edinburgh gives you that very, I don't know if any place else does, that within that month, you will get every audience on the planet.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
And you get, there's the potential to get every, yeah. any audience on the planet.
Yeah.
And you learn how to cope with that.
Yeah.
Certainly, if you're a newbie, you know, real baptism. Of fire. Is this your Vanessa, is this your first time?
My first shows internationally. It's my first time to the UK. I feel like a big grown up. I know.
Have
look
you had
at
a
me
pie
go.
Pie yet? Have you been to Greg's?
Have a pie. What kind of a pie?
Well, a kind of indistinct pie full of meat filling.
Oh, like I know what a pie is. We're Australia, aren't we, the pie people?
Yeah, no.
No, we taught you everything you know. You know.
Yeah, just
I'll have a pie
probably
for breakfast.
Probably a scotch pie.
Yeah, okay.
Don't have it for breakfast.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of the macaroni pie.
I love a macaroni pie.
Wow. I had a chicken Thai pie. Does that count?
No.
That's for goodness sake.
With tomato sauce.
That's cordon bleu.
Exactly. They don't go all international cuisine on us. You're in Edinburgh now. Sort yourself out. I can't help but notice that you still haven't told us what the Alexander sisters
yeah.
did.
Yeah. Well, they were very funny.
We were a comedy double act where we did a thing about Scottish country dancing, and it was very much a time, I think, because there was us, and the year above us were, at drama school was Victor and Barry.
Victor and Barry, yeah.
And we just kind of did variety. I think it was sort of old-fashioned variety.
But what did you actually do as a performer?
God knows, really.
Did there you have the
singing.
Outfits?
Funniness,
we had a
little
pinafore.
Kind of dialogue-y,
like clowning type stuff,
dialogue-y yeah. kind of things, very funny.
And it was because there was a that little gap yeah. Of time between old style and you know like working yeah. men's clubs stuff, and then we're all very angry because we're young and we know better than yeah. anybody.
Well, we were kind of around the time with the we are very angry thing. And so we would wander into places where people seemed to be angry, and we were like, don't really know what they're angry about. They don't seem to have an awful lot of stuff to be angry about.
It's probably Tuesday.
Yeah, could have been Manic Depressive yeah. Tuesday. I think that what we wanted to do at the time was... we were playing with the idea that you could have sympathy for a character and laugh at them at the same time. So the character that I played, who was this woman, Morag, who was sort of perpetually put down by her sister. And the structure of double acts, generally, older ones, they had that stuff of stop your constant interruptions, right? Like there would be the handsome one up front and then there would be the constant interruptions. And so we wanted to push beyond that a little bit and actually be a bit meaner, but in a Scottish way. And so then people would feel very sorry for Morag, this woman that I was playing. And that my mother actually used to find it really difficult to watch. She did. She would find it really difficult to watch because she said, I don't like the way that people feel about who... Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I think that... Don't you think that's part of a thing with an audience, though, that you want to present them with something where they feel something?
Oh, yeah, right. Emotion.
Right?
Totally.
Or change their mind about something. Yeah. You've either got to make them feel something or think something.
And with,
yeah.
you know, comedy double acts, there has to be some kind of power play. You can't just have two people who like one another very much and respect one another having a chat. No,
yeah.
you can't have that.
Well, it's not funny. You need some dynamic or drama.
You don't see many strong comedy, like, or any kind of duos anymore, do you, really?
Yeah.
I can't really think of any.
I can't think of any... current ones that
scared,
are
scared weird little guys.
Yeah.
Do you know
not
this
for a long
is
time.
Very untrendy of me to say this, but we are late at night, and so you can kick my arse.
That's fine.
But I do really like Ant and Dec. I think the way that they are together, politically, they might be something over here or whatever, but I watch the way that they work together. These are guys that do.
Oh, I've got it done, yeah.
But also that to be able to do live TV, and you've done that concept, right?
Yeah.
To be able to do live
with
TV is hard, but to be able to do live TV
do
with someone else.
The that relationship, Ant and Dec,
yeah.
began really as PJ and Duncan,
that's right.
which began on
Biker Grove.
Yeah. And so it was, in a way, it was like an acting performance that they then took those two
people.
Dramatic personae and turned them into something that was much closer to them, lost a bit of the accent, but the power balance and whatnot was set when it was a drama, when it, they were two people in a drama.
Yeah. Although,
they
do you
still
know...
very definitely have a... There's a higher status one.
Dex, the clever, Nance, the annoying.
But
I interviewed them, actually, for a BBC Scotland show when they were in Biker Grove, and they were there as handsome boy actors, right? I'm so sorry if you don't know who
these people are,
right?
I'm enjoying the story.
But they, so these guys, look them up, because I do, I think they're very undervalued, and probably because they're wealthy and they're, you know, white boys or whatever.
What's the issue with when you said they're political? What kind of political stuff
well,
are they doing?
Well, one of the, no, they do a lot of primetime things, and so primetime is traditionally seen as not, you know, everybody gets angry at the same time.
More
right?
conservative, probably.
Yeah.
And a more kind of very mainstream, you would
they
say,
are
rather.
Totally than, mainstream.
But I get what you're saying, because I think they're very skilled and I think they've got a great chemistry and they make it look easy, like they're just deking about.
Totally.
But in fact, they're not. And that's how you know when somebody's good.
Absolutely.
When you think, oh, God, that's not how I could do that. Then you try and you realise you cannot.
That's
because
totally
they're good
the
at it and you're not.
So interviewing them as like wee actors, they were brilliant together. Like they were, they actually just really liked each other.
Yeah.
And then that thing makes you go, oh. And then one of them, right, went through a really kind of public alcohol problem, like had the whole meltdown thing, and the other one stuck by him and everything. I think they actually really are good pals, and I like that. I like when your pals...
You'd always
really
have to be to work together like that closely, wouldn't you? You'd have like
marriage.
Is the Australian comedy scene different? Have you got double acts there?
Not a lot, to be honest. And I feel like a letdown. I don't watch much comedy. I know.
Shut your mouth.
I know. Well, I feel like when I watch it, I can't relax because I start assessing or thinking or, oh, stop touching your hair or stop grabbing
did
at your
Did you used
shirt.
To, before you were doing it, did you used to watch it?
Not really. And you know the thing about don't meet your comedy fans? I remember the very, are you comedy, you know, your idols? The first comedian that I ever watched was probably back in the 90s, Greg Fleet.
Oh, yeah.
And I loved him so much. It was his special that was on TV, the half hour that was about his heroin use. And it was kind of that beautiful poetry of comedy and, you know, tragedy. And then I met him, you know, maybe 10 years ago or so. And, asked me for $20, you know, like, asked for money. Like, it's just like, oh, you're my hero. Why are you asking people, strangers,
he's
for money?
He's a wee surprise wrapped up in skin, though.
And
he
I
really
totally
is.
Have respect for, he's had a hard run and I know he struggles, but it's like, I wanted to just love him. You know, I wanted to just,
So how long have you been comedying? And so, why did you start? If you didn't watch it then, don't watch it now.
So I've always done public speaking and training facilitation. So I've worked at, different. Yeah.
I don't like Asian words. You know, it's like strange new nouns that are made up from...
Well, vacation. You don't like Asian.
Like, facilitation.
Oh, I
train.
See.
What do you like? I was a trainer.
Yeah,
trainer.
Well done. You were
so
a trainer.
I was a trainer within disability services, community services, mental health type stuff for many years. And so I just, you know, when you put yourself outside of your comfort zone and you get that nervous feeling and then you do it, like before delivering training, I would feel like, you know, you need to have a shit, you're nervous, you're all of that. And then you deliver it and then you'd be like, yes, that was great. And so after a while of delivering training, I just lost all of that. And I thought, how do I get back that feeling of the high that you get from, you know, being in front of people? And so I did, do you know Mandy Nolan, Australian comedian? She's a legend. So I live not far from Mandy. So I did one of her workshops, a comedy workshop, with no intention to ever do comedy. I just thought this would put my outside my comfort zone. And I just loved it. So I did open mics for...
What did you love about it?
Exactly that feeling, the drug feeling of... When I first signed up to a workshop, I thought we just had to do, at the end of the workshop, you just do a 5-minute set in front of the class. But it was at the Byron Bay RSL Club in front of 200 people.
Hello.
Whoa. Yeah, so I didn't sleep for weeks. I was just, it was all I could think about. I felt anxious forever. And then when I did it, it's just, you know, that elation of like, yes. Yeah, and I just got addicted to that. So I did, I've only been doing, 18 months ago, I lost my house in the Lismore flood. So we had some, really bad floods, and my house went under pretty much to the roof. So I lost pretty much everything.
Shit.
Yeah. And so that was kind of the final straw of, I'm going to quit my job and just see what happens with comedy because I need time at home. And it's all just fallen into place with the solo show. So that's fantastic. All I do now is the solo show. Yeah. I was running a few rooms before that. So under my brand, Larry Laughs Loud, running lineup gigs and open mic events, but mainly like still working part time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the flood was kind of one of those tragedies. It's like that's
and you get to share your love of the dildo.
Love of the dildo. I know. Do you know the funny thing? When the house went under, I'd just done Adelaide Fringe. So I did 2 weeks in Adelaide for the Fringe Festival. And the night, I partied like a rock star the night before I left Adelaide. Then when I got home was the night we had to evacuate. But yeah, we evacuated and I still had my suitcase packed. So it still had all my favourite performing clothes, my Doc Martens and my favourite vibrator. All packed, ready to go. Crisis ready. Good to go.
That's intense though. Yeah. That's an intense thing.
I think that is a brilliant thing with performing, don't you think? Where it's like when life happens, life is hard and there's shit that you have to just find a way to deal with it. And then there is a thing about performance where you might get a bad show and then you're like, oh, okay. Like, I'll get over it, man.
I had to do a show while there was still, like, while my house was still underwater and we couldn't get in there. So I was displaced with my son. Like, we had to get kind of, you know, a friend took me in. But yeah, there was a show and they expected me to cancel. I was like, fuck no, like, I'm going to do the show.
Yeah.
So yeah, and it's, I think that's the beauty of comedy is you've got 1 hour of, the whole world doesn't exist in that 1 hour, and there's something so beautiful about that. Yeah, the amount of just different people that have come to me after the show and be like, one lady who came to my show a few months ago, and at the end of the show, she gave me a big hug. And you know when you can tell that, oh, that hug was something?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, she messaged me a few days later, and her son got murdered earlier this year in her house while her and her husband were in the bedroom. Yeah, he got stabbed to death by, you know, he was 17. Yeah, and so she said it's the first time she'd laughed since her son was murdered.
Oh.
I know, and it's like, that's so sad, but it's also so beautiful that that's what comedy can do of just, you know, in the moment of just fucking letting go. So beautiful. Yeah.
McBriar.
Yeah.
Just brought the tone down a bit.
No, I didn't.
I'm just trying to remember a flood. I mean, there was an unfortunate incident with a kettle, but that's as much.
You've had the unfortunate incident with a bus. You can just tell us about you.
Fucking bus.
Her, Martha's show is a litany of unfortunate events.
So yours is all stories about yourself?
All of them are all about myself. Yeah. Yes, and true. Events, true stories, and
there's death involved.
Well, there's death, Satanism, child abuse, animal cruelty, but it's not all laughs.
Yeah, right.
So there's
I stuck
issues.
With it.
Yeah,
I stuck with it all the way through till we got to Kate Bush. She lost me with Kate Bush. Well. I do not see the attraction of Kate Bush.
Is it? That's the red dress thing.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't understand. I don't even really know. Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. Let's talk about something else then, shall we?
Are you a Kate Bush fan?
Yes, I am.
Do you do the red dress? No,
I haven't got.
Everyone gets together
and dances. I don't
suit
red.
No.
You would suit red.
We've actually looked fabulous in red.
I suit a burgundy. More of
a
burgundy.
Blue red, you would suit a blue red. Not a, like, orange red.
No,
but it's not Kate Bush then, is it?
But everybody does that thing and I always look at it and watch it and I thought, oh my God, that'd be great to do that. But I've never done it. Yeah. And I don't have the balance anymore for Kate Bush.
Oh, good. Yeah, because your ears are fucked.
I would fall over. I would also. I'm not able to go right in a Kaylee. If anybody's looking for a sad story, you know, compare that to a flood and see how you feel.
You can't do like the eighth reel.
No, I did try
dashing point sergeant,
and it was very unfortunate. I couldn't dash.
What about a wee gay Gordon?
There's only so gay I can get, and then they twirl around, and
no,
I can't.
Oh man,
I can't.
That's awful, Martha.
And I didn't even know how bad it was until I was actually in the moment and I was at a wedding. Then you've no choice.
No.
And it became very problematic, and I was actually asked
sit
down.
I thought you were going to say asked to leave.
Yeah. Sit down.
Canadian barn dance.
Yeah,
that's I'm scared to do Canada. I can only dash so far. I can't go the other way.
Yeah, it's an Aussie old English dance.
I can't do si do.
No. Heel and toe.
That's a good thing. Nobody needs to do si do that.
I mean, so don't talk to me about suffering. Right. You know.
I mean, that is a particularly Scottish disability, isn't it? Because I mean, like if you were Irish, then you just have to stand there and do nothing with your wee legs flailing around underneath, but you don't have to, you know, birtle.
It's not quite the same, but as a Glaswegian, I have a bit of an affliction. I can't swear.
You can't swear?
I cannot swear.
Oh, fuck off.
Did you not know that he can't swear?
I think I had it battered out of me when I was three.
Oh.
I
then you're
swear.
Not a proper Glaswegian.
Unless I put on a different accent.
Can you say duck?
I can spell out the word. I can do it so slowly, but I'm kind of pretending.
Are you offended by swear words? I swear the time. I swear at the supermarket.
You can't be offended at swearing in Glasgow.
No. Actually,
I can swear in a different accent.
Yeah. All right, go on then. Let's choose an accent. Again. Pick a country, someone.
I don't know. I'm
almost like
I just don't.
Did your parents swear?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Like I'm almost operating like a
you
carer
see?
For Stephen. I swear for both of us in any given situation.
That's kind
Stop
of
embarrassing
you.
Yourself,
that
Stephen.
That is very kind of you. Wow.
I know. Now,
so did you swear when you were three?
I think apparently when I started speaking, all I did was swear.
Oh, I see.
What's
yeah, that's
how
the
cute
answer.
Is that?
I think
how cute
they
is that?
My feet in the fire.
What's your replacement? Like if you hit your thumb with a hammer, what would you say?
I might say bother.
No.
That's pathetic.
No. I think that's kind of awesome.
It is.
In a strange way.
It's not that I don't want to swear.
Bother.
It just won't come out.
Yeah, no.
You might have been bashed, you reckon, and it's trauma that you've repressed.
Do you know, I feel the same about exercise. Do you know what I mean? People do exercise and they go, I really enjoy it. And I'm like, I just can't.
No.
It's not really my
exercise.
People do, Gobstick. People do. I don't
you drink
understand
water.
It. I know, man. What the fuck?
I went for like, I was trying to do this 8 glasses a day of water and I never hardly ever drink water, an occasional slug.
Fish fucking it.
I never.
WC Fields
said. Exactly.
Right?
Fish fucking it. And people said, you've got to drink more water, you've got to drink more water. So I thought, well, I'll go try. And I had to drink 8, because it's sort of glasses of water a day. And I've never been so unhappy in my life.
How many days did you do it for? Just the one?
No, I did it. I actually stuck it out for 2 weeks and every day I complained.
Were you judging every time you did it?
Every time I did it and sometimes I couldn't even swallow it. And it got to a point where people were actually hitting me and say, if you mention the word water again, I will kill you. I'll drown
you. You have to be careful about that shite because wasn't it the actor Anthony Andrews who was in a play in the West End and he'd heard about that you need to drink too much water and he sort of almost drowned himself, like he drank so much water.
I think you drink too much if you're dehydrated. Like if you've taken drugs and then you drink too much.
Had you taken
drugs?
No!
You hadn't been spinning around on the dance floor.
Fucking wanted to, though. But yeah, so some health things I find exhausting. Just even the idea. And I don't get that high. Even when I exercise, I do not get that high. People go, I get, you know, a rush and a...
Never had it. I force myself to drink water only because I drink so much alcohol and I feel like it balances it out. So it's like tick that box.
Balance.
Can I ask when did your asking, but we're all almost compulsory joining in on this. When did your fascination with dildos and vibrators start?
I don't actually have a fascination, and I probably don't own as many as I made out to. She's disappointed.
I am.
I genuinely lost everything that I had except for that one vibrator in the flood. It was funny because after the flood, all these strangers just come to your house and help you get rid of all your shit because pretty much everything just has to be thrown out. And I remember one of my comedy mates, he's a local kind of open micer. He's like, I've got a deck outside, so we're just grabbing all the furniture and because it's all covered in brown sludge, and he's just throwing it all over the deck. Mm. Anyway, he goes to throw it over the deck, and the side, it was my bedroom table, like side drawers, and the drawer just goes zoop, and then this little remote control just goes dunk on the floor, and we just had this moment where we both just look at each other. I was like, oh, I think that's off a vibrator. It was like, yeah, I thought so, but it's just done. Yeah, but I don't have a fascination. I've been a single, like I've dated people, but I've been single for primarily, you know, majority of since I was divorced about 12 years ago. So I think if you don't have vibrators as a single woman,
it's not healthy.
You're stale. That's the point.
It's not healthy to not have activity going round in your nether regions.
Oh, no, I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. Couldn't agree, but it's great. Going to sleep, waking up in the morning, lovely. Just clear out the tubes. But I've never really found a vibrator or a dildo that.
Oh, Jesus. I will hook you up. I will send you the one. I will send you the one.
Okay.
Yeah, like the sucking motion ones.
Just asking for a friend. Do you have a skill for that? Like, you said to her very confidently, I'll hook you up, I'll get you the one.
Oh, no, I know the one. And everyone who's got the one.
Is it not a bit like Harry Potter?
Is there only one?
The dildo chooses you don't choose the dildo.
What? That's the one then.
The Satisfyer Pro. It's like the main bit that goes in you, but then the clitoris bit is like the suck blow action.
Whoa.
Yeah.
You ought to be advertising for these.
Yes, I need a dildo.
Could you not have got your Edinburgh show sponsored?
Correct, yeah. That's what I need. So our sex shop in Lismore, where I live, I did a show locally a few weeks ago, and they gave me a whole bunch of sex kits, like little sex gift packs to give out. Oh. It was fucking hilarious, because I did a thing at the end of my show, because I talk about all the things I've shoved in my vagina in the show. And so I did a thing on stage where I was like, if you want a gift bag, you've got to tell me what you've shoved in your vagina. And so we went around, you know, I was running through the crowd with the microphone, and people were kind of saying, oh, a hairbrush. I'm like, yeah, you get a gift bag. And then one lady's like, chocolate. And I was like, chocolate? And she goes, in my asshole. I was like, oh.
Hello.
Yeah, got her husband to lick it out. I was like, fuck yeah, you get a gift pack.
Yeah.
Does anybody ever say the Osmonds?
That's my fantasy, Martha.
All of them.
Well, no, Donnie and Jimmy were my things, but you can't even say anything about that now because they've all had strokes.
Have they?
Oh, so no.
Donnie had a stroke.
Jimmy had a stroke, and I think Meryl was as well.
Oh, what, the long-haired lover from Liverpool?
He was my first love, Jimmy Osmond. He was.
He was looking Osmond's very peaky on MasterChef.
He did. What did he want? Did he want you to become a thing?
One of them. So he's a missionary. I didn't answer the door, but her indoors did. So Luciana answered the door, and it'd been in the evening times that he was in town, and she's, you're, and he didn't hang around. She wanted to bring him in.
Oh, you can't be doing that before you know it, you've signed up.
I know. No. She thought it'd be worth it.
I think it's really interesting what you're talking about, though, because I think there is a thing about, we've had this thing with our sons, actually. Do you know that Mark was talking to me about that in America, I think, there's something weird, like 55% or something like that. I'm making this up, but it's like over 50%.
Sounds reasonable.
Of males are still virgins by the age of 30.
What?
Yeah, I'm not joking because of this whole, right, don't quote me on the number, but it's like a ridiculous number, and it's to do with online relationships and all that stuff.
Okay.
And we've kind of got into this thing with our kids where we've talk to them about, it was funny because my son has been friends with someone who identifies as, I'm not entirely sure what this person identifies with, and I frankly don't give a fuck, right? Mm-hmm. If they're happy, that's fine. But we sat down, we meet and we have pizza once a week, and I said to him, honey, here's the news. One of you, no matter what you can identify as, will get pregnant. Make sure that doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. I don't care what your identification is. And I'm not, you know, like in my day when I was younger, there was a whole thing about not having sex, that you shouldn't, because it's like a thing. Mm-hmm. But I find that I'm in a place where I'm like, it's biologically not right.
Uh-huh. How old are your kids?
My eldest is 20, my youngest is 16.
Yeah.
And so my eldest graduated during the pandemic.
Yeah, yeah.
So he had, like, he did have a graduation thing, but, like, he basically spent his last year at school on the thing. But also, that whole thing about while we're in this place where everybody's frightened about offending everybody else and what gender everybody is and who defers to what or whatever, I think it's more important than ever to be able to talk to your kids and go, right, okay, here's the news, right? Just, like, make sure that you, like, look after shit and always consent, and don't worry too much about that kind of stuff. Like, worry about your integrity and what kind of human you are, and don't step out of line.
I think it's important to be able to talk to anybody.
Yeah.
And pretty much so few people in important situations, like, I don't know, meeting a partner, flirting, whatever, are not doing it in real. They're doing it online. And then, so you can pretty much be anyone you want to be online. And if you're getting places, you know, fast online, then there's got to be a bit of you, I think. Well, there would be with me at the back of your mind going, I'm going to be a massive disappointment to them if they ever meet me in real life.
And there's
life.
So much anxiety, isn't there, among young people these days as well? You know, they're not social, they're, you know,
although
hardly getting...
with my kids, the thing with both of them that's quite interesting, I think, is that... so my eldest son had 5 kids visit from out of state, right? They're all from different places, and he knew them all from online. One of them he'd known from middle school, which is like when they're about 12, right? And this little kid who's adorable and, you know, whatever, he calls me auntie, right? Because he's lovely. He's just a lovely kid. And they visited from out of state, and they were like a very interesting bunch of individuals, and they all game together. And I really liked that they had a global connection, right? Like, they all have got a way where they, like, will see shit going on. And they're much more savvy online than we are. And so, like, my youngest son had this situation where there was, like, somebody went a bit mental, and he ended up getting bullied online, and they do this thing where they try and SWAT you, which is send a SWAT team round and whatever. It was, like, full on and really intense.
A SWAT, like an actual SWAT team?
Yeah. So, like, in our street, so I live in America, right, which is a little crazier, I think, just only because it's bigger. And there was, like, one day...
There's probably a few more reasons.
Well, you know, when it's bigger, there's always a bigger quota of crazy. But I have to say, I know a lot of really good Americans, which I know is not a popular thing to say, but it is the truth. And I also know a lot of really fucking crazy ones.
Mm-hmm.
So, but there was a thing in our street where it's like this long, you know, American street as it is. And there was there's a house midway, which has been used for filming different things, right? Mm-hmm. And whoever was in there, somebody got mad at them. And then, like, 6 o'clock in the morning, this SWAT team arrived with, like, guns and all manner of stuff because...
Like, official SWAT team?
Yeah, because what's happening is they're spreading this information that, like, there's a bomb in there, or it's, like, a terrorist cell or whatever. And so kids do it to one another. And so somebody tried to do it to my youngest kid, which was, like, this full-on thing.
Oh, that's just not, like, throwing rocks on the house, is it?
No,
like,
that was not a good thing. No. But we knew the kid. And I was like, I'm so going to get you. No, but the point is that I think that it's difficult with online relationships for us, in our perspective, to understand what they know. Like, my 16-year-old is very sussed about online stuff. And he can sort of smell if something's a bit weird, because a lot of his relationships are online. But I do think there is a thing that we do have to encourage our children to have relationships, both, you know, like physical, just even talking, but physical as in physical. And it's complicated to do it in a world that's trying to work out whether it's okay for people to be different, which is where we are right now, right?
I think maybe... there needs to be some kind of training in just coping with massive disappointment. Because real life is just not generally as glamorous or as anything or as perfect or as knowable as an online. You can control so much of who you are, what you look like. You can get whatever it is, chat GPT to make you sound more glamorous. And then you go, well, let's meet up. And there's this wee bockily person. And I think we have to...
But that would happen to us. That wouldn't happen to our kid. Like my kids, I watch my kid going like that, and this is that. Like, he is sussed on it, man. And I honestly think that, I feel like we're going through a period of time in the world where everything's very disruptive, right?
Yeah.
And everything's, like, up and down. And I do genuinely think the key to all of it is just don't be a jerk, right?
So that's before
and talk.
Yeah, just don't be a jerk.
Do you know what we had, though? We had Scottish country dancing.
That's true. Well,
that's been taken
from...
That was the bonding. The bonding. And how you... And
oh,
how you
sexual
like,
prancing.
And see, the only thing I don't
prancing.
Like about the kind of online thing is the... And it's just like you say about the country dance and everything else. I look back quite fondly at the awkwardness of being young and of about trying to find your way and trying to negotiate somebody that you want to be with.
It's a negotiation.
And not having a fucking clue what it is you're meant to do and thinking everybody else can do it better and everything else. And then the realisation about how messy everything is, how people are messy and relationships are messy and sex is messy and it's all gunge and stuff and dildos and floods.
Yeah. But I think most of us are still,
single
people are still doing it online. Like, because most of us, I mean, my whole life is kind of comedy or being a mum. There's not really much other time in between. I think people are so busy that we use online dating, like adults are using online dating just as much as kids.
Mm.
So that's before I wrote the show, Teardrops on My Dildo, my intention was to write a show called 50 First Dates. And so I started going on as many dates as I can. I thought I actually quite enjoy that process of the awkwardness of the pre-thinking about what do I think this is going to be like, how much heart have I let myself, you know, put forward in our messages back and forward. And then you meet the person and you're right, it's pretty much always not like it's supposed to be. Either you think they're going to be a dick and you kind of like them, or you think they're going to be amazing. And that whole process, I think, is fascinating.
I have horrendous memories of sexual dancing. We had social dancing was what it was called at school. It was leading up to Christmas because there was going to be the Christmas dance and you had to learn to dance. We had social dancing. Everyone called it sexual prancing. And it was like my worst nightmare because I would go from being like, you know, I'm the smartest girl in the class to I'm the one that nobody wants to dance with because I'm not fanciable. So it was worrying to that extent. But once I got past all of that and was out in the wild and whatnot, there is nothing that beats, you know, eyes meeting or whatever across a crowded room and you just go, hello. And I know nothing about you, but there's a...
chemistry.
Like an animal thing of... We can at least have a beer and then I can, you know, discover that you're an arse or you can discover that, you know. You know. But it's that initial kind of electricity that is completely missing now.
Is it though?
Well, online?
I suppose because I've been married for 100 years, right?
Right.
Right. And a one night
stand. Is it going
stand,
well?
It is going well.
Oh, well
it's the
done.
Worst one night stand I ever had though. Because I look at him in the morning and I'm like, are you still here? Right. So I totally get that eyes meeting across a crowded room thing. Because we had like this one night stand and then we decided to date afterwards. Well, he decided to date afterwards and I was like, okay. And then I remember coming out of the tube station in Embankment and seeing him up the street and going, oh, fuck, it's you. Like, it was always you. Mm. All that other stuff with other people, God damn it, right? It was all just a waste. It was always just you. And we were, like, married really quickly after that, you know. And we go through our journeys and stuff, but it was him. It was always him, right? But I think there is a thing that, and Mark and I have talked about it, which is that what you're talking about is about being judged within a very small community. Uh-huh. Like, you might be the not pretty girl in a place where everybody's all blonde and doing high kicking or something like that. For those kids, like, so for my kids, they are communicating globally.
So you're and being so, judged against the world?
Well, but what it means is you've got more chance of finding your people who are like you.
It's a much bigger
and,
pool.
Yeah, mm. And then you can define, you know, and decide who you're like. And it's why, I guess, what I mean is I'm very pro it, because it isn't going to help anybody by saying it doesn't exist or I don't want it. So then if something does exist, like, we acknowledge there's a table right here, acknowledge there's a table right here and work out how to use it. And I think it's quite useful.
I think the flip side of that is that there is so much accessibility that there's almost this element of continual, the grass is always greener. Mm. Do you know, like, you get a little bit of something, then, oh, I think this will be better. And then so people are kind of constantly looking for what's better.
Yeah.
And so people just stay on that journey forever, mm. which I kind of like. I don't really have a, I don't have a desire for being in a relationship at this stage of my life, which is a very comfortable place to be. And I think a lot of people are starting to think like that. Like, if you don't, like, what's a relationship going to add if you're an independent person who doesn't really rely on, you know, my kids are done, I'm not looking for a breeder.
Yeah.
It's kind of, it's a different world now, I think, for a lot of people, which is nice.
I think it does come down to just don't be a jerk online or in life.
Yeah, that is
totally. Yeah. Totally.
That is excellent.
Don't be a jerk.
Advice. Martha.
Yes.
Can I steal that wine? Because I'm the worst person.
You certainly can. See, I'm afraid we might be down just to... Anyone want a beer? Do you want a beer?
Yeah, I'll have some beer.
Excellent. Beer.
Sweet.
So you have the wine. Martha, do you want some beer?
No, thank you.
Do you want some of mine?
No, I'm
I would give you some of mine.
You're very sweet, but I'm
you must be due for a water, Martha.
Not a beer hand,
and you,
not a beer hand.
No,
Lynn, you can't drink beer because you're gluten intolerant.
I am. It's, well, I can drink gluten-free beer, but that isn't gluten-free beer, and therefore I would have I'd have my head on the table, and I would be want my head under a blanket. It's really not a good thing.
You don't
get
like scabs and stuff, though. Some
no,
gluten people
I get like really intense, like probably what a migraine is or something like that. I can't focus, the light's really bad, and then that's the first thing, and then my joints are really also.
See, as we were saying yesterday, all my life I never met anyone who was anything intolerant until about 15 years ago. Frankly, I was brought up in Paisley, went to Paisley Grammar School. Intolerances were just not allowed.
I do think it's probably pesticides or something. Because the stuff that's going on is, like, crazy.
Oh, it's a nightmare.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, and it's not even a joke or anything. Do you know what I mean? Like, I can see it really quickly when it happens. And I'm totally not in it. I don't have a problem with dairy or anything like that. But gluten, it's like, I'm like an old lady.
What is now in the gluten? Is it? What is it like in Australia? Australia always seems to be kind of the last bastion of...
Frontier.
Being sensible. Ah, no, you know.
We're
right,
yeah,
you know?
We're a bit behind.
Have a tinny.
Yeah, no, we still don't. Like, some places won't have anything gluten-free on the menu still. Like, a lot do, but you'll still get a look of, like, you're a pain in the ass.
Yeah. I get that.
Yeah. So, but, yeah, there's lots of people with intolerances, so I don't know why. Like, it's an easy thing to fix, isn't it? Just
don't eat the thing.
It's don't just eat the thing. Don't take the thing out of the menu. Yeah, it's not hard.
We've all got our own shit, though. You've got the thing with your hearing aids and all that.
I could give you a list, Christ. But I haven't got gluten intolerance, I don't think. I think I've got human intolerance.
Yeah, arsehole intolerance.
Yeah. Just anal valve intolerance. And the older, and I honestly think I'm turning into one of these people that I used to say, older people are really horrible and rude and they just don't like young people. And that I have found to be true.
That it is a horrible, horrible, horrible thing to have to face.
That you hate young people?
Yes. I'm finding them very hard to take nowadays.
I don't
what
know
age do you consider young now? Like, what's the mark of being annoying?
37. I'm 20. Kind of... I kind of think, if I'm brutally honest, and I had the power, Gen Z would just not exist anymore.
Oh, hey. Sorry, is that your kids. Children? Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
It's you would like them, though.
Manchu, but I'm on board.
Yeah. What age are yours?
My daughter's 21 and my son's 15.
Yeah. So similar, right?
Yeah, yeah. Ages, right? Yeah. Yeah, they are definitely a different breed.
They're kind of
motivation and a little bit entitled. I don't know if that's just mine, but
massively.
They just why would I want to do that? Why would I want to contribute to the world?
Yep. Well, because I can click that and I've signed another petition. Which makes me a good person.
Yeah, yeah.
But then,
changing
don't you
the
know a whole load of adults like that, though? Oh, like, yes. As you get older, I find professional complainers where I'm like, you know, there was a fire alarm, right? And I'm staying in student accommodation, posh student accommodation, if there is such a thing, right? So I'm staying in student accommodation the other night, and the staff there are magic. And the facilities people are fucking rubbish, right? They just are like, I might turn up. I've been asking for my telly to be fixed for like a week and a half, right? And it's just an aerial, but they're like, don't know. I might be just wearing an overall that day, right? And there was a fire alarm the other night and at 1 o'clock in the morning. And this one woman was dealing with it. There was other people helping her, but one woman. And this guy, and I hate to say it, American, was right in her face about it. Like, she's dealing with all this stuff, go over there, do this, like, all about safety. And he was like, oh, my God, what country do you think this is? Like, what country are we in? She just went, Scotland. But he was yelling in her face. He wasn't Gen Z.
But why?
Because he was unhappy that it was 1 o'clock in the morning and he'd been woken with a fire alarm. I guess he figured it would be better to just fucking burn.
I would have said, I tell you what, mate, go and have rest, and when we find your charred remains, I'll be the first to tell your wife.
But that's that thing. People do complain. They just do.
I know.
Special.
I've just had what I consider to be a brilliant idea, because we do have somebody here in the building who has an overview from an age even greater than ours.
No.
We have Mr. Andy Zapp.
Are they still alive?
Mona. Mona.
The Zapster.
Sorry, but we'll have to cover till he gets here. He doesn't move that fast.
Is he a complainer?
Right. Can we?
You wouldn't be good in a fire alarm.
Is there a seat? Yes, there's a seat there.
Marvellous.
Lovely. So you're what, 126? Don't lean back, lean forward. You're on a microphone.
Welcome, Andy.
Technology.
Hello. Oh, a peppermint ear.
How old am I?
This day.
Because you're old.
Do you want us to guess?
Go on.
Oh, no, I hate that.
Go on, guess.
27.
Hard life.
68.
Mm. You are not.
I always guess for real, and then I'm like, oh, I know. What if I shouldn't have said that?
Then you've got no.
I know. But I'm usually pretty
high. You've got to shave 10 years off, what you think?
71.
No.
Higher or lower?
No, oh, come on.
Oh,
higher.
Don't tease.
74.
No. That's what she said.
75, no.
75. Did you miss a birthday?
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Oh, well, that's pretty well good going. So how has it been? Because this is your first, full fringe under your own steam.
From the Crimea.
Yeah, it's been really exciting.
Down here with the young people.
Yeah, with the young people. Well, everybody's young compared to me, aren't they?
Really? And how young a person do you hate? What's your limit on when people are annoying?
Well, my grandkids are 15 and 18.
Hate them?
No. Only when I ask for money.
Yeah.
Got any money?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Resourceful.
But yeah, it's been great. I've really enjoyed myself, you know. Just, it's my first solo show.
Oh, nice.
Mm.
And I, had good numbers, good buckets, good review.
Yeah.
And, just had a really nice time. And it's kind of really given me a confidence boost.
Are you going to go on tour with it? Or
I'd like to take it to London and put it on some black boxes. And I've got people that will come and watch it. Yeah.
Nice.
Because a lot of the
good audiences, good show, good review, good audiences,
envy's a very ugly.
I am so happy for you.
Yeah, you always are.
A lot of Andy's show is about the good old days of mainlining drugs.
and other such fun behaviour.
This is heroin chic.
Yeah.
Yeah, it keeps you nice well. Yeah.
And how long were you doing comedy before you solo?
About 8 years.
Good on you. I love hearing that. A friend of mine is 71 and he's just done his first solo in Australia. It's like, fuck yeah. Like, yeah.
Did you feel that, you know, when today's Gen Z or whatever.
What are Gen Z to film in?
When they are your age, they're not gonna have any fun.
So what's Gen
scary
Z? What age
shit?
Is? I never know either. Gen
Z. What's Gen Z? What? Oh, 20.
20 something.
There's millennials, right?
Yep.
And then the younger than the millennials, it's millennials are like.
I was finding easier to just say that
so young, age 20.
Yeah.
So it's like teens, 20s. They're not going to have any, you know,
world
amazing,
to live in.
You know, bad behavior stories like.
They will.
I don't
like
know.
What?
They will.
Oh, one time I took full dairy instead of oat milk.
Hey, no, are you judging me for my gluten thing? Are we going to have words about the gluten thing?
Well, we can do that in private.
Right. What age are your audiences?
It's only because I respect
your work. What kind of people
are
you pulling in?
Well, I'm lucky. The best audience, I have a really young audience, middle-aged audience, and old audience.
Yeah, and you get the same response either way?
That is great, you know.
Yeah.
Older audiences, all right, you know, but younger audiences are all right. I don't know.
Is that because it's like some kind of like fairy tale from, you know, it's like a Marvel thing when you tell them about.
Well, they can't believe the things I talk about.
What exactly?
Really, you know, like.
And they'll never have
examples.
Well, I say to the young stage? Fellas, you know, like, because young men sort of fantasize about anal. Well, I say if you want to sort of buy...
In general, all of them.
Yeah, a lot of the time, you know, like it's a big thing. Oh, I want to try anal, you know what I mean?
I thought you were going to talk about host prices.
Yeah, well...
I haven't that either.
Right, can I continue?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, more anal.
We're all gagging. If you can...
Didn't I say in the show? And I say, well, you know, like if you want to try before you buy, you know, stick your cock in a jar of peanut butter, right? And then somebody shouted out, what, crunchy or smooth, you know? So people do kind of join in, and they can't believe that this old guy kind of talks about stuff like that. That's all it is, like using drugs and injecting drugs. And
How long did you take heroin for?
Heroin. My drug of choice was more. Anything,
what was it?
Really.
Yeah, okay. I thought you said heroin before. What was your drug of choice?
More. Anything. Alcohol. Yeah. Heroin, cocaine,
although
barbiturates.
There are different things. There's a thing that my husband talked to me about this thing about, because my husband's sober, and he said that the reason you can tell a difference between a junkie and a drunk.
Yes,
right?
That's the joke I was in the show.
Oh, the one about the purse.
Yeah, about the purse. Yeah.
Tell me.
Well, no, because he uses it on his show. I'm not going to tell.
No. It's an AA joke.
Yeah,
anyway.
Right.
What's the difference between an addict and an alcoholic?
I don't know.
Well, an alcoholic will nick your purse and an addict will nick your purse and help you look for it.
No, an alcoholic will nick your purse and then cry about it and ask your forgiveness.
Oh, will you? Is that the one? Oh, my
and
one
an
is.
And an addict will want to nick your purse and then and help you look for it.
There's heroin's still big over here, though, isn't it? We don't really have heroin in Australia. We have more ice.
Well, this is where it was. Well, we started it, didn't we, with the opium wars.
Yeah.
So we've been exporting heroin to the world, really. England, you know.
Yeah.
I think maybe Afghanistan have got something to do with it.
Not really. We started it.
Yeah. Well, I didn't start it because I'm from Cumbernauld.
Yeah, that's right.
And so we just, like, hung about,
what
made
did
pies.
Did start in Cumbernauld?
Outlander.
Ash at Pies.
Outlander. Uh-huh.
Outlander? Oh, what's his name?
Outlander is filmed in Cumbernauld. Can you believe that? I am not fucking joking. And so in America, I know people who write Outlander and they're like, oh, I've been to Scotland. And I'm like, where have you been? And they're like, do you know a place called Cumbernauld? And I'm like,
the OK Eye Factory.
I've never heard of that. Yeah, no, they film there, yeah.
Wow. My son was actually, it was an extra in the first series.
Oh, was it?
Of Outlander. They put a call out for...
Was he in, he wasn't in a sexy scene though, was he?
No. They put a call out for
Stephen
tall,
would
tall
have allowed
guys,
that. Yeah.
Tall guys with beards and long hair. So he went along, tall guy, beard, long hair. And his mum's Italian, so he's got a bit of a big nose. And he said, actually, would you shave your beard off? We're going to make you a French nobleman.
Oh,
so but later on, so he's a filming a filmmaker, camera guy now, and he's been on filming on Outlander as well.
Wow.
Which is weird being on the other side.
Yeah, that's brilliant though.
What I found fascinating, you can't swear.
Yeah.
I was just wondering when he sang that, got that role.
What was that film? Because like, it had the Australian guy teaching the king to swear. What was the...
The king's speech was
The king's speech.
Yeah.
Yeah, the king can't swear, can he?
Well, I would imagine the king can do whatever the fuck he wants.
Yeah, but he can't, though. He couldn't swear. He couldn't swear as well. Who was it? George, was it? I don't know which king.
I remember watching the movie, but I don't...
It
was the one where he wasn't meant to be king and then he had to deal with the war.
Edward, was it? No, yeah, that's right.
George? Yeah, the one that came after the abdicating one.
Yeah, that was George.
Yeah.
And he had a stammer.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. He had a stutter.
So he had an excuse.
But I think he did swear.
No,
think,
he did. Yeah. No, he... No.
I think he did.
Who first said what was swearing? If you know what
well,
I mean.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the just words.
All the sweary words just mean something. But some of them are now bad words. You can tell every day in
Kenya. Well, they're
Kenya.
All proper words in their own right.
Aye.
Well, they're all in the dictionary.
At the right time, it's the right word to use. But there it's are how words, you use yeah. it makes but it
Can you even say shit?
Yeah, I can say shit.
Oh, no. So shit. So that's the so shit's not a swear word.
Oh, shit
and bollocks.
Oh,
depends on your company, doesn't it? Well, you can say shit. What can you? Where's the category?
Yeah. Oh God.
Can you say damn?
Yes. I think
bloody.
It would be the F and the B and the C. I mean, I could say it.
The F and the B and the C.
But I would have
what,
to. I'd have to build myself
bitch,
up to
bitch,
it.
Bitch, bitch,
bastard.
Can you say?
Or
is bugger? Some people think buggers.
Did you get hit?
Oh, but you can't say bugger.
Did you get hit on the head with a spoon?
Hang on. What's your B word then?
Bastard.
Oh. So you can say bitch but not bastard. No, hang on a minute.
Wow.
Why can you say bitch and not bastard?
I don't know.
Well, you need to practice it.
That's
you need to,
basic
yeah, sense. You need to start saying.
And I can't afford the therapy, so I'll be
no,
fine.
Well, therapy's
we're all chipping.
Right now.
We're
you don't have to afford
your session.
Is, you know, in, I spent a lot of time
crowd
in Kenya, and they just don't swear there. They just don't, Kenya. They just
They don't have bad words.
No. They don't have bad words, really. And so you can tell everybody that has worked with me
because they're
they swear. And you're just like my friend David, who drives. But they don't swear badly. They don't swear like properly.
Yeah.
And
they don't know how to do it properly.
Yeah, they'll just go, something happens on the road and they'll be, oh, fucking, 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 fucking.
I love that.
But it's just because all the sweary words, they've got good plosives, they've got good,
yeah.
they're like fucking.
Yeah.
You know, they're powerful, they sound bastard, bugger. There's not any particularly lovely sounding swear words, but I just
so
I would
swear
love
as
to
endearment.
Know when they became unsayable.
Well, see, I have words that I find really fucking offensive that aren't sweet. Privilege. I really hate privilege. Because it makes the assumption that one of us is better than the other, and I'm like, go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
Who's better in this room? Mm. Like, it's my privilege to be here, or you have a privilege for this. I hear it, and I go, gives me the heebie-jeebies, right? Don't like the word privilege.
No.
I hate that.
No.
I really hate
that. And also because they get bits. A lot of these words are just used so badly. I am a bit of a grammar Nazi.
Yeah.
And, you know, a linguistic Nazi. And I loathe, you know, I really, my dad always said that don't hate because hate corrodes the soul.
Yeah.
But for people who cannot speak English properly, if they purport to have English as a first language, I hate them.
No, I understand it. I also hate anybody that uses the word honourable.
Honourable.
I'm like, because honourable is always
honourable.
Assigned.
The right honourable.
Yeah, it's always assigned to people that have no honour. Where I'm like, I hate that word.
Right. And now, there's so many. And I suppose it's because they get repeated so much. I was talking to someone, my stepmum, and I almost found myself uttering the hideous phrase, it is what it is. that I would have had to talk myself. I mean, all of those ridiculous, meaningless phrases that are just, they're air fillers.
In and of themselves.
In and of themselves.
Yes.
You see, as an Aussie, our air fillers are like, oh yeah, fuck it.
Yeah.
You know, like bang, done. Yeah.
Proper filler.
Yeah,
proper filler.
Yeah.
Polyfiller.
What do you hate linguistically, Martha?
I hate quite a lot of things linguistically, especially up. No, that's not fair. Go. I hate the people that say them. Really know if I hate loud so much, but I do hate it is what it is because everybody says it now. Uh-huh. And I just, I hear it. Sometimes I want to say, well, it isn't what it's not.
Mm.
Or just punch them out, which apparently is a crime. So I hate that. So, and I don't like the words like you, privilege and honourable, but I quite like formal speak. Oh. So I quite say, I'm quite like saying to my, so we'll go in the drawing room. Mm. And he say, we haven't got a drawing room. And I say, well, we have if we fucking draw.
Yeah.
And just, you know, so like that kind of makes me, and you know, the kind of historical dramas where they have all the
vestibule.
It was really quite troublesome. Yes. You know, normally would say, I'll kill that cunt.
Yeah, exactly.
So I like it when people are very eloquently euphemistic. I quite like that.
What's that mean?
I don't know.
Yeah. Eloquently euphemistic.
I like that.
Different, vernaculars don't get lost. Mm. In, you know, because now everybody's kind of speaking online. Not everybody, but there is a tendency. There is a move towards everybody speaking online speak, and you know, ruffling and all of those the abbreviations. And I think even in our country, in fact, Scotland's a perfect example. In a country as wee as Scotland, if you could go a couple of hours and find the kind of vernacular is totally different. I remember trying to explain to a friend of mine that I brought up to Paisley, that the Glasgow thing of going to know day that, eh? Going to know.
Mm-hmm.
And that just means, please don't do that.
Yeah, cut that out.
Yeah, so why? It's just kind of going to know, do that, eh? Going to know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got a music to it, and it's got, you know, the vowels have got a sound to it. And if all of that gets ironed out, you know, the Tuchter speak and the Aberdonians, and it's... I mean, in terms of, you know, like some place like Australia, Scotland, tiny. It's not even a very large estate, you know, not a very large cattle ranch, but all the different and so different.
Yeah.
So different.
Yeah, the accents, even from Glasgow to Edinburgh, it's a huge difference.
Yes, totally. Yeah.
Huge, yeah. Like, you're quite easy to understand, but some of the people from Glasgow... No, you didn't, Stephen. You said you're from Glasgow, didn't you? Are you from Glasgow as well?
I'm from Cumbernauld.
That's not Glasgow.
Yeah, I got to look that up. I don't know that place, but I'm very intrigued.
Yeah.
And it's the same, you know.
Down south London.
Down south.
Oh, we love it. Then we love a bit of
you
vernacular.
Get, yeah, because you get even in one city.
Oh, yeah.
Someone from North London sounds different.
Yeah, the dialects.
Matt, come and talk about Cornwall.
Come and talk about Cornwall.
Come into the drawing room. Come in. Into the drawing room.
Come in there. Come and sit on my chair. Tell you what. You come and sit on my chair and I'll lean.
Come and sit on this
geezer. No, don't lean. You can have my chair. You shouldn't be leaning.
Just come and sit on this chair, Matt.
Fucking hell, Matt. Get on the chair.
Matt, it needs to be tonight.
Right, I'll sit there.
Matt,
all right, so Matt, introduce yourself, please.
I'm Matt Price, I'm not meant to be here, but in my defence, my missus, Martha McBriar, can't find her way anywhere really without my help or with an Uber.
You're like a guy.
I want to know about your best lost story, but I want to hear it from your husband or your man. The best lost story?
Losing her way, you mean?
Yeah.
There's too many to mention. There's loads. We once had, remember that traumatic time, Edinburgh, it would have been 2016, where the woman kicked us out of the house for 3 days and we had to go back. And then you said to me, hey, that's it, I'm going to go. And you walked in the wrong direction. And I had to follow you and allow it to calm down before I could point out, look, you've been walking for 5 minutes. We're going to go back that way. So that happens all the time.
Why
it
do you have such?
Time,
is that because of your ears, or
just dizzy? Or are you just
an idiot?
The brain. We're talking about this. It's the brain thing. Because sometimes I will look in a place that's familiar to me, and I'll go, I do not know where I am. And Matt'll say, but we live across the road. Yeah. And I'm like, well, I've never been here before.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I can get lost in a car park like that.
Yeah, but sometimes I'll be in a place I've never been, and I'll be walking about going, yeah, I know this. And Matt's like, how do you know this? And I'm like, yeah, I'm just feeling it. So it's just a trick my brain plays on me, which tells me I'm familiar or tells me I'm not when it's
is that
not
because
accurate.
Of the tumour?
It's a tumour, yeah.
She had a tumour.
I've still got it, it's just shrunk.
Oh, they've shrunk it?
Yeah.
Through chemo?
Radiotherapy, yeah. So it was the size of a golf ball and now it's the size of a Malteser.
Amazing.
Oh, that's nice.
Excellent. And will it always stay the size of a Malteser, or can
it? It could grow, so they give you MRIs regularly to see if it's getting big. And then if it gets to more, you know, kind of bigger, sort of 25 millimetres, I don't know what they'll do because I can't get that treatment again. Yeah. So it would need to be surgery, and it's with the location of where it is. I wouldn't necessarily survive it. Which
what
is
part
why
of
I
your brain
radio.
Is it on? Like, do they, like that controls?
Schwannola, yeah. Schwannola nerve. The ninth. Schwannola nerve. Yeah.
It's a bugger.
It's called an acoustic neuroma.
So it's in.
It's benign.
Oh, sounds fancy.
But benign's a really horrible word because it's not benign.
See, that gets on my tits as if it's gorgeous. Mm.
Yeah.
You know, she's benign.
Oh, it's fine. It's still cancer.
Right, okay. Hands up, everyone here who's got a tumour or had a tumour.
Wow.
Really?
Tumour-tastic.
So, Marcus.
Is she contagious?
Andy, tell us about your tumour.
Well, I had a tumour on my spinal cord.
Ooh. Bloody hell. Yes.
And they just cut it out. They can be attached. Some can be attached. Yeah. Could be free-floating. One with a little word stem bubble, or it can be attached to the spinal cord like a slug. Mm. That's the worst one. I had the word bubble.
Oh, wow.
And they just cut it out.
Done. Oh, it's like that? Yeah, just one operation. Done.
25 years ago.
Wow. And did the drugs help?
Well, I relapsed, yeah. I was 7 years clean, and then they put me on the meds.
Oh,
no. It wasn't.
No, it's an interesting story, though.
Yeah, it was just they put me on the... They couldn't discover what it was. They couldn't diagnose it for 4 years. They were kind of searching around.
Yeah.
They were saying, it's this, and that's it's your back.
V. Lynn Ferguson, what did you have?
Yeah.
I had two cancerous tumours on my left breast that were two different cancers. And they cut them out. One of them had already spored, so they had to cut that out again. But I'm free and clear.
Great.
Fantastic. Yeah. Fantastic. I've got a wee tumour thing on my left adrenal gland, which, a bit like Andy, they're going, and you, Martha, they're going, well, it's in a very, it's wrapped around everything, so as long as it doesn't go banzai, fine. And then I've got another cancer, rare but low grade apparently, in my stem cells in my blood.
Used to be the head of BBC, didn't he? Low grade.
Now,
is that a new thing, Kate?
Yeah. Well, it's a new. Apparently, it's a genetic thing, so it's been there, but I've only just discovered it.
Yes. Yeah. Do you wish you didn't know?
Interesting.
Because can it be treated at all? You just got to sit and wait.
Oh, I'm getting chemo when I go back to London.
Yeah.
But it is absolutely fucking fantastic. If
what
you know, people,
chemo is?
Oh, no. The whole thing. If people come up to you that are just like, you know, that you hate and that you know hate you. And they're going, oh, hi, how's it going? It's like, yes.
GoFundMe, you fucker.
Actually, I've got cancer. How's it going with you? Wonderful. Oh, the wee face. They just do not know. So...
Yeah.
You know, shit happens. I mean, quite
it's incredible
frankly.
That it's such
so
a
So why would you
want to
grass yourself up then now? She's lying. She
but
ain't got cancer.
The amount of shit that I've put into my body over the years,
I mean, I would think that a wee bit of rare but low-grade cancer is the least I should expect.
I'm still waiting for mine.
Now, I was rather hoping to bring this podcast to a climactic, happy-go-lucky,
right, better get the gear out, Martha,
celebratory
end. We're all here.
So, yeah, exactly, that's marvellous. So, right, from cancer, as you're here, Matt, everybody gets to promote their show.
Okay.
So even though you shouldn't be here,
yes,
you've blagged.
He's so nice.
I know,
so
but he's blagged two cans of no San bother. Miguel
and a tonics tea.
Well, sorry, two tonics tea.
But she can't drink it anyway. So
yeah, okay, yeah. Right.
Right. Well, against my better judgment, because we never
cancer
even
cancer to Cornwall.
We never even right.
Okay. Stephen, did you not have cancer as well? Didn't you put your hand?
No.
He just can't swear.
That's the worst cancer you can get.
Of the vocal cords, the swearing vocal cords.
Give him some Rowit, no.
Because you've got you haven't had cancer,
right?
And you've had two cans of beer and a tonics tea cake.
Yes.
You're going to pay for it by promoting your show in a Cornish accent.
Okay. Well, here's the thing. My favourite Cornish phrase is "Eat an all like a woman should have been a dog."
Pardon?
Do it again.
Exactly. "Eat an all like a woman should have been a dog." That is as authentic as it gets.
It's not like a guy should have been a dog.
What it means, "Eat an all," as in he does know.
Yeah.
Like a human, like a human.
Yep.
He should have been a dog. So I'll say someone knows something, you go, wow, is it his? Sorry to use the male.
Yeah, there we go.
His intuition is good, therefore he knows.
Ah, he senses stuff.
His sense.
Oh,
his
that's
sense. I would have taken that as an insult.
I know.
It's when someone says something it's a bit sarcastic. It's a little bit sarcastic. So you're right to be insulted.
Never liked the Cornish.
Yeah. Well,
right.
There you go.
Promote the show. Armigurians.
You know what? You've always told me to be myself. I'm promoting next year's show.
Oh, hello.
Seriously, no.
We could all be dead.
No, I might just as well. I'm coming back next year.
Are you writing a new show for next year?
Oh, God, yeah. It came to me walking to my show.
Sounds like it's going to be good.
The six people who came to my show the other day really enjoyed it, I have to say. You know,
yeah, it was great.
You know, it was amazing. It was just like so great.
We loved it.
A new show and I'm going to take a long run up at it and I am going to preview the fuck out of it. I don't quite know where it's going to be.
Do you know what it's called?
I do. It's called The Special That Wasn't Special. And I said for two reasons. I filmed a comedy special that went tits up, but I was in a special needs class when I was age 11. I was misdiagnosed as special needs. How about that exclusive?
That's a fucking great story.
And here's the thing. I was the special among the special that wasn't special.
Disability sticker.
Just to do things my way.
Absolutely.
I respect the industry and everyone within the industry.
No, that's a cool topic. That's a great bio for sure.
McBriar, promote your show.
And we've got a podcast, haven't we?
Hello. Yes, my show is called Storytastic. Uh-huh. And it's at the Dragonfly, which is an insect, and a cocktail bar in Westport. And it's a lovely place. And I think quite a good show. Well, I should be more.
Yes.
I think it's like one of my best. I think it's like my best show ever. So, yeah, thanks for coming.
Andy.
I finished my run.
Oh.
Saturday.
Oh.
Do you want to promote next year's show?
Yeah, it's called Sex and Drugs and Getting Old, Part 2.
Nice one.
Right, yep. That's if you're still here.
If I'm still here, yeah. If I live that long, ladies and gentlemen.
Vanessa, you and your dildos?
My show is called Teardrops on My Dildo. It's at Bedlam Theatre, 9:30 every night until the 27th of August. Then I'm doing it in London and Paris and Belfast.
Wow.
Belfast. Belfast has already sold out, 180 seats in a town where no one knows me. Yeah, and it's had great reviews. Got 4 stars from an amazing the best reviewer in the country, apparently. Thanks, Miss Copstick.
That's quite all right.
Cheers.
No problem.
Oh, we're back on the Aussie accent.
G'day, mate. Yeah. Sorry.
I want to, when I see that tail, I want to go, Teardrops on my dildo, told a tale on you.
Good. Maybe we can do my closing act.
Okay. Oh, excellent. You're booked. Now then,
the
right? Lynn Ferguson, except no other. Tell us about your show, Lynn.
Well, I'm doing a show called Storyland, which is on at the Gilded Balloon at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and it's going all right, I think.
And tell us what it's about, Lynn.
It's about how we are all our own individual works of art wrapped up in skin.
That's lovely. Oh, I like that.
Yes.
Excellent. Well, thank you all very much. What did you do? He's taking away the microphone. Oh, sorry, he's pointing the microphone at me. So thank you very much. I think this is the biggest podcast we've had in terms of numbers of people. Wait. I'd like to apologise. I honestly never
can't swear but can still be a prick.
What?